Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable Podcast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to the Reader's Roundtable. I'm Jessica Trotter. And before we get started today, I want to let everyone know that there's been concerns about returns and items being checked in from your accounts. So just for a quick member service announcement, please note that returned items will be quarantined for at least 72 hours and may take up to a week to be checked in. Items will not clear from the accounts until they're checked in, so those fines are going to show up if you return them in late enough that the quarantine would put fines. They're not going to be charged. They'll waive those fines at the time. You're not going to be charged for the time spent in quarantine. No going in. Those things will be quarantined for at least 72 hours, but there's a lot of material to be checked in, so that is slowing things down. All right, now back to books. We are gathered together again through Zoom. I have also on the mic, I hear Madi.
Hello.
Hello.
And Cheryl Lindemann.
Hello. Good morning.
It is really nice to talk to you guys.
Yeah, really nice.
We actually haven't talked a lot lately.
You're right. It's been busy, but since we don't see each other at the office, you can go several days without talking in person anyway.
Yeah.
Through voice.
Yep.
I do want to mention that there is still time to sign up for what we call the SRC or the Summer Reading Challenge. And I want to mention that we are so close. We have 4,000 people signed up for the SRC, cool. And that includes babies, adults, kids, and teens. And are you ready for this? We have read 2,325,613 collectively. So Collingham County, go Cattle members. The last day to post your points, your participation points in reading or activities would be August 8th. And you can find that through cattle.org/summer.
That's a fun number.
That's awesome.
That's very cool.
Over 2 million. I'm like, that's awesome.
It's fantastic. You know, Madi, what I've been doing this year is I finished mine a while ago, but I keep tracking the minutes. There's no prizes, you know.
You're right.
That's okay, but it's really fun to see. And it also is an accountability thing a little bit for me. So just kind of keeps me making sure that I'm doing that reading habit and continuing it. Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah. I love it. I actually stopped doing that. When I finished mine, I just stopped posting my minutes, but I should consider doing that just because I kind of like it to see like what I've been reading in the last several months. Mm-hmm. And there is a way for you to post that, although there are other ways to keep track of that. But
in just another second. Tracking method. Yeah, definitely.
Yep.
So I'm going to just start out by talking about what I've been reading lately.
Cool.
I've got a couple of JF books that have been released recently, definitely within the last 3 months or so. The first one is called The Great Upending by Beth Kephart. It's kind of like a middle grade book. And the story is set in rural Pennsylvania, and it's on a farm. And I have to say that the farm scenery, there's just a lot of lush landscape and a lot of animals in there. But it's basically about a girl and her brother, Sarah and Hawk. They're maybe like between 10 and 12 years old. And you can just tell that this is a farm family that struggles, which is common in the United States, maybe all over the world. And they're struggling, especially with drought. When the book starts, there's a big fire, which kind of adds to the problems they're already experiencing. But one of the reasons I was really interested in the book is because one of the characters, Sarah, has Marfan syndrome, which I didn't know very much about. But it's a condition that she has, that she's really tall and she gets kind of made fun of. And it's just a really beautiful, beautiful book. There's a kind of a mysterious character in the book called the Mister. And he lives kind of in an old silo that the family has renovated to kind of get some more income in. And I really, really like this book. And it's definitely going to be on my mind for a while. The other one that I really like that I'm actually not finished with yet, it's called Black Brother, Black Brother by Jewel Parker Rhodes.
Oh, she's wonderful.
This is a story about two biracial children, and one of them is darker than the other. He's a black boy, and he is getting into a lot of trouble. Or is he? You know, you really don't get the sense that he's really doing anything wrong. But for right. whatever reason, his school administrators are kind of harping on him. And the story mm-hmm. begins with this young boy going to jail, like just for a couple of hours or something, but still just the effect that has on him. So it's a hard read when you start thinking about how children of color often are subjected to just different situations that perhaps children who are not of color don't experience. I am looking forward to getting further into the book, maybe about halfway, but yeah, that's what I've been reading lately.
Do you want to go next?
Sounds really good, Madi.
Would you like to go next?
Sure. Yeah. I wanted to start out by just saying that I've actually watched a little bit more TV and movies than I usually do. And
wow.
I know for me, that's
sorry.
something I've been doing with my daughter, and we found some shows that we can watch together. She's 8. And we were watching these, I call them vintage, but they're really not. They're horse dramas for children. We found several of those, you know, on streaming services. And two of them, interestingly in a row, they're long series, but they're both set in Australia.
Okay.
And it really, you know, I was thinking about how the TV shows can spur this, or movies spur this interest and almost like an obsession with the place. And I mm-hmm. never really had that with Australia. A little bit with New Zealand for sure, but not Australia. But I really have this Australia bug really bad right now. I want to know, I want to just soak up everything about the history. So I've been reading about Australian history, post-colonial history, but I'm finding more colonial or pre-colonial as well. And there's a book that actually coincided pretty well with this that is a new release. It's actually one of the Library Reads August picks. It's called mm-hmm. The Exiles by Christina Baker Klein. And I was able to attend a library professional development event where she spoke about the book and her influences and why she wrote it. And it just sounds absolutely fantastic. I have not read it yet, but it's on the TBR pile, you know, ready to go. And it's about two exiled women from England to Australia, of course, actually to Tasmania. And then about an Aboriginal child that was also forcibly removed from her home, and about how all their stories come together in this part of Australian history. So
wow.
Fantastic. Yeah, doesn't it sound interesting? And
yeah.
It's where you realize, and maybe you, the both of you don't feel this way, but I don't know that much about Australian history. Why? You know, it's sort
no.
of like
bits and pieces, but no, I understand.
Yeah, right.
You find yeah. these holes in your... in your, especially our historical education, probably in this country. And it's just one of those things that it's fun to fill that in as an adult. And one of the pleasures of reading for me. As far as what I've been reading lately, I have a couple to talk about, but I'll just mention one right now. This is probably the book I was most excited about for the whole year. And I got an advanced reading copy of it. So it came out in August. But I received an advanced reading copy of it. I was so happy to get it quite a few months ago. And it's called Vesper Flights by Helen MacDonald. And Helen MacDonald in 2015 wrote the book H is for Hawk. And if any of our listeners
yes.
enjoyed that book.
Mm-hmm. I remember that. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it really won a lot of awards at the time. It remains probably one of my favorite books that I've ever read. And that one was one story about... the author Helen MacDonald, sort of a memoir, nature history, about her training a goshawk after the loss of her father, and about how those two experiences entwined, the grief and the training of this very difficult animal. This one is not a single story, it's a series of essays, Vesper Flights, and Vesper Flights is actually one of the essays in the collection. But in this, she of course centers a lot of the pieces around birds, her love of birds, bird migration, different birds that are extinct or endangered. But she also goes out into a lot of other, you know, territory with this one. And interestingly, she, in the intro, she talks about what her books are about. What does she really write about with everything that she writes? And I'm going to quote from the book. She writes, "I choose to think that my subject is love. Specifically, love for the glittering world of non-human animal life around us." Yeah, isn't that beautiful? And also she says, we need to communicate the value of things, which she does through her writing, so that more of us must fight to save them. So this essay gets a little bit more political in the environmental realm as far as climate change. Also with people, she gets in, she lives in England, she gets into Brexit. She has an essay about a refugee that she interacts with. So it's not just about animals, but again, through her books, over and over, there's a theme of animals become a mirror for us, for good and for bad. So there's a lot going on here in this book, as in all of her books. Pretty deep stuff. But birds, her childhood, trees, creatures that are gone, spring. She believes spring is leaving. It's very, very deep.
Yeah. Now,
seasons. So there's a lot of richness in this collection, and it's beautiful. I highly recommend that one. So how about you, Jessica?
You talked about place and filling in gaps. Mm-hmm. And in a weird way, that's sort of how some of my reading has been going. Two titles. I will preface this by saying my reading is not back on to what it used to be. Still nowhere near there, but it's better, getting a little better every week. But one of the things that has helped with that is that I've been kind of catching up or getting ahead in some cases with advanced reading copies of with Tor's novellas. They max at about 112 pages.
They're my kind of book.
Yes, exactly. but it's a great way to read new authors, get a lot of different points of view. And two of the titles that I've read recently are both writers of with an Asian background pulling from fantasy tropes that are specifically fantasy and action and stories that are very, I don't want to say Asian inspired isn't quite the right phrase, but you know, they're pulling from their own background. It's not a whole bunch of Western content written by Asian people. They're really pulling from their own heritage, and it's very neat to see their voices getting out into the mix. So two of the books that I've read, totally different ends of the spectrum. The first one is called The Order of the Pure Moon Reflected in Water. Ooh. This is by Zen Cho. This is just fun. The tagline for this, even on the book, is a bandit walks into a coffee house and then it all goes downhill from there. It is, in its own way, it's sort of, I think even Cho kind of describes it as, it's sort of martial arts movie fan fiction. it's a story of a found family, a group of contractors, read that as bandits, are joined by a nun who had been working in the coffee house, when a bar fight basically ensues. And because she's pretty much out of a job because of the bar fight, she decides she's going with them. And they have this scheme that they're not sure it's going to work, but they're fairly sure it's not going to work with the nun on board. So it's just the kind of going back and forth of becoming a weird family. It's just wonderful. It's vivid. It's filled with humor and heart. And I would actually genuinely love to see more of these characters. It really felt like, this is throwing my Western view on it, top of it, unfortunately, but it felt like a martial arts Western with a lot of humor. You know, it's a bunch of bandits. Yes, I mean, it's just a weird mashup, but it was just wonderful. And Zen Cho has written a couple of other books, full-length novels that I've absolutely loved. And this is just a quick one. If anybody's interested in getting started with her work, it's great.
Okay, I have to ask, is she a Buddhist nun, or is she a Catholic?
It's not it would be more along the lines of a Buddhist nun, but it's not, it's not definitely China.
Okay.
It's very, you know, it's very similar, but not absolutely, I think, China.
Okay.
But yes, it's more along the Buddhist.
Okay.
And like one of the members of the band is even sort of is somebody who used to be in the order and has left. So they recognize immediately kind of what's going on or what, where the problems are going to be as they're moving forward. And it's just, it's interesting, but they also befriend him. So it was, befriend her. So it's very interesting. It's one of those things where I just go read it. You kind of have to read it to get it, but it's fun. On a darker end, I read another, and again, max is 112 pages for these, pretty much. Another title called The Empress of Salt and Fortune by Nivo. And this is, I do not understand some author's ability to achieve what they achieve. This book has all the political intrigue and action of an epic series boiled down to 112 pages.
Wow.
I don't know how they did it. I don't get it. I mean, I don't know how she managed to do all of this. This is a story of it's basically a traveling monk is on their way to an empress's crowning. And the empress has died. An empress is being crowned. In this case, an historian has decided to kind of take a side trip to where the empress died and stops in this building where there is a woman who starts to tell them her story. And this is them, and I need to be careful with that. The woman is known as Rabbit and had been a companion to the empress who has just died when she was exiled. And over a couple of nights, Rabbit explains how, from exile, the Empress of Salt and Fortune toppled an empire through secrets, through intrigue, through a very dangerous and scary plot. But it's a story that Rabbit wants to be told, but it leaves the historian in a position of knowing secrets that could topple an empire all by itself. And it's just, again, 112 pages, and there's just so much packed into it, and it's fabulous. So those are two of mine. And again, I am totally an evangelist for the tour books. The tour novellas are absolutely a great way to learn about new authors, and they just do a wonderful job selecting people.
Yeah.
All right. Wow.
What else have you got, guys?
So, this is Madi. I've been reviewing a lot of picture books and, I guess you could say juvenile nonfiction picture books, because, I really enjoy reading poetry and history on a kid's level. One of the ones that I've been looking at quite a bit this week is called Woke, A Young Poet's Call to Justice. And this is by Mahogany Brown. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you have been online at all or watched TV, there's just no way that you've been able to miss all that's going on in our country and even around the world with protests and such. And this book was written with contributions also by Elizabeth Acevedo, she's like a spoken word master. I love listening to her, as well as Olivia Gatwood. And it's illustrated by Theodore Taylor III. And what I really like about Mahogany Brown is that she just writes descriptions that are very quick for a reader to pick up on and understand. And she, the title, Woke, A Young Poet's Call to Justice, she starts off with, you know, just talking about what does it mean to be woke? Well, very simply, she writes, it just means to be aware, to be aware. And I've been thinking about it a lot, like aware and alert of things that go on, things that happen to children especially, mm-hmm. I think about. And she covers a lot of different themes, or all three of the contributors cover a lot of themes in the book. But two that got my attention were related to body positivity and then also forgiveness. This is from one of Elizabeth's poems. She writes, your body is always a good body because it carries the good in you. And then one of Mahogany's poems, she writes, forgive me the most lonely request I know. Those lines just really stood out to me because, especially as it relates to bodies, like we're a culture that is so Instagram focused and constantly thinking about how we look. Like I'm thinking about, like, even in our work interactions, like I want to make sure I have my hair combed, and you know, we're just so, I guess, mm-hmm. so ingrained in our culture is this idea of what our bodies look like, what our faces look like, and that there's just so much more to us than the outside. So mm-hmm. really mm-hmm. like that. The other book I want to mention, but if you will allow me, please. 100 years ago, the 19th Amendment was ratified August 18th in 1920. And this is how it reads. The right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. So woohoo, women got the vote. I mean, that's just incredible to think that mm-hmm. that was 100 years ago and really not that long ago.
No.
So the book that I was looking at these books quite a bit in the winter and then sort of forgot about them, but started looking at them again in the last week or two. It's the one I want to mention is Fight of the Century. It's by Barb Rosenstock. It's a juvenile nonfiction book, and it's a historical picture book where we see Alice Paul, who is really just one of the many women or suffragettes who worked to enact the right to vote for women. I like it because it's kind of set up like a boxing match. Like, you got in this corner, we've got Alice Paul, the challenger to the champion President Woodrow Wilson. But she, for 5 years, was just showing up to the White House to protest, to demand that the vote be given to women. And really, she was defending democracy. So I really recommend that title, as well as many others. I won't mention them now, but we've got a lot to be really thankful for in our country. And as I think about how, you know, groups of people all around the world are working to change things, we just see how it takes a lot of time and a lot of grit to keep at it. And it took a long time for that to change. So yeah, so those are the two that I've most focused on in the last week or two.
They both sound excellent. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's interesting that we talk, of course, before these to prepare, but sometimes themes emerge as we're talking.
Exactly.
It's kind of like that sort of chemistry. It all kind of comes together because you said showing up. And then you're also, Madi, and you also talked a bit about two books with children and how we see children and how, you know, as a society, we see children and how we could perhaps see them differently. And I think that ties into one of the reads that I read in the last couple of weeks that was just phenomenal. It's called The Power of Showing Up. Mm. How parental presence shapes who our kids become and how their brains get wired. And this is by Daniel Siegel and Tina Payne Bryson. And as far as parenting books go, these are probably the most popular parenting book authors right now. They're both psychologists. They do a lot of great work. Their most famous book is probably The Whole Brain Child, but they have several others related to that. And so what they do in these books is really break down a lot of brain science and back up what they're talking about with brain science, but they make it really readable. And they have these little really simple illustrations, that little line drawings, almost cartoonish, but it really reinforces the point. So in this book is probably one of the most simple and easy to read of all of theirs, in my opinion. I've read them all because they break down good and they call it attuned parenting, being attuned, just being there every day and tuning in. What does that look like? What does that mean? And it can be boiled down to four S's, they call it, that a child needs to be safe, seen, soothed, and secure. And then each of the book goes into four sections. Yeah. And why this ties back to some of the what you had mentioned, Madi, is that it's been shown that, you know, children who suffer different traumas, food insecurity, real trauma, or not real trauma, that is real trauma, but traumatic experiences like abuse, they're considered adverse childhood experiences. And the number of ACEs, as they call them, that you have increases your rate of, being involved in criminal activity and having a really challenging time in life. So they said that this attuned parenting can even help children who have been exposed to ACEs and have a lot of ACEs. And it sort of goes back to attachment, how we attached ourselves as parents, or how we attached as babies and as children. But even if we didn't attach well, we can be attuned parents. So it's one of the things I like about these books. They're saying, okay, this is where you're at. It can get better from here, wherever you are. And I feel like this is, I think about this as a parent, but I also think about this on more of a global level for children in our society. How many children are really struggling and suffering, and how we need to work on things at that level with trauma-informed counselors in schools, trauma-informed teachers, that sort of thing. So just an excellent book, highly recommend to parents and other people who work with children as well. So,
okay.
Quite a good read. And then I think we talked about, we all have huge TBR. And I feel like mine are getting worse as far as they're just getting bigger. There's just so much great stuff coming out. It's been out. I missed it. I literally have baskets of books by my bed. I can see them from here. And it piles up, but it's a fun problem to have, I think, in terms of problems.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Right, it is. So we had talked as a group about maybe just throwing out some things that we haven't read yet, but that have been on our radar that we're really excited about. So I'm going to launch into a couple of those. And these are ones I'm looking forward to reading in the next month or two, and that sort of thing. And some of them I was waiting for while we were closed. But as a reminder, we are libraries are open in the sense that you can pick up your holds with curbside or doorside pickup. So we can get some of these books again. So the first one I had is called Troop 6000. The Girl Scout troop that began in a shelter and inspired the world by Nikita Stewart.
Ooh.
And this came out in May of this year. So it got a little dwarfed again by everything happening in the world. And this is, Nikita Stewart is a New York Times journalist. And she tells the story of a Girl Scout troop that formed in a very unlikely place. It was a sleep-in that served as a temporary homeless shelter in Queens. And Giselle Burgess, a single mother of five children, created this group with the idea of giving girls at the shelter something to work for and believe in. And the author, Nikita Stewart, went and stayed with the group and observed them and worked with them for about a year to write this book. So it's a story of creativity, determination, hope, but it's also an unflinching look at the continued problem of homelessness in America. So really looking forward to this one coming out soon. And then I'm going to do one more. This one is called The Language of Butterflies, How Thieves, Hoarders, Scientists, and Other Obsessives Unlock the Secrets of the World's Favorite Insect by Wendy Williams. And this one, Wendy Williams is a science journalist. And I think that we are book soulmates because her first book was called The Horse, and it was a deep dive history into horses. And now it's butterflies. So if you know me, you know that you're hitting my hat buttons here. So she's really a master of creative and narrative nonfiction. Her books are a treat. For somebody who says, you know, I don't like nonfiction, this would be something I would give them, one of her books, because she can make geological history interesting. It's very people-centered. So she pulls a lot of threads in, and she can make sort of a breathless pace to her books. So they're really fun to read. You really can't put them down. And this one just dives into butterflies in a way that other books haven't. And, you know, why do we love them so much? You know, humans don't always enjoy many insects, but this is one that we love and why, but it goes a lot deeper than that. So really looking forward to this one. And this book came out in June.
Okay.
Yeah. So how about you, Jessica?
So I have a couple I want to at least start with. One of them, actually, we do kind of float a list of possible titles amongst us before we get going. And this one caught my eye. This one was on my list, but it came to mind again because of Maddie's list. Suffragette movement again. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So there's a book called The Once and Future Witches by Alex Iharo coming out in October. She wrote one of my favorite books last year. It was The 10,000 Doors of January. This is a historical fantasy set during the suffragette period. I'm really curious to see where she's going with this. It is about a group of three sisters who are at the very least the granddaughters of a hedge witch, who may be kind of on their way to slightly co-opting the suffragist movement in New Salem. So I'm so curious. It's got this really beautiful cover, and it's by Alex Harrow, and it's about suffragettes and witches. So
that sounds cool.
my family has ties to Salem, so it's just one of those things that I'm very curious. And it sounds like it's about both humor and art.
So Jessica, have you heard of this particular combination of events in a book before? Has the setting been done before, as far as you know?
Not the time period. Well, yeah, there actually is a couple of historical, I think people really enjoy, there's more like a little later turn of the century, right? At the this one actually I think is set in 1893-ish,
okay.
I think is what I read. So there's a few that are dealing with witches in this time period at the moment.
Ah, cool.
Come out recently. Okay. It's actually is becoming a kind of an era that people are looking or
interesting. Yeah.
Playing in, I guess, maybe a good way of looking at it. Another one, Paranisi. And I don't know if I'm saying that right or not, but it's by Susanna Clark. It's coming out in September. She wrote,
Jonathan Norell.
Strange and Dr. Norell. Yeah, Dr. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norell.
Yeah, that's it.
Strange Adventures of, I think. Anyway, it is a very, very popular book. There was a TV show. She's done a couple of books of short stories, but this is her first full-length fiction title coming out since then. It's being pitched to readers of Neil Gaiman, Madeline Miller Searcy, David Mitchell, and Aaron Morgenstern. So I'm thinking complex and haunting are going to be kind of keywords there. Somebody, and I can't remember which of those authors, had a cover quote that basically described it as a puzzle box. And given my absolute love for Aaron Morgenstern's Starless Sea, which I would definitely describe that way, I'm really curious. I really want to read this book, and I plan to sometime in the next few days. I want to start that, honestly.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. I'm good.
Are there other ones people want to?
Yeah, so.
It's on your list, Maddie.
Well, it is actually no longer on my list because I read it this week.
Sometimes all it takes is us to be talking about this.
Yes. This is actually a book that I wanted to read back when I worked at the Mason Library with Cheryl. Okay. It was on my to-be-read list forever, and then I'd check it out, and then I'd have to give it back. And so it's Dumplin' by Julie Murphy. It's about 5 years old. And you probably know the title maybe by the Netflix movie, which I have not seen.
It's
pretty good. But oh my gosh, I'm so happy I finally read it. This is I won't say too much about it other than that it's set in Texas. It is so funny. I mean, they actually make homemade peach tea. It's about a teenager who decides to run for the Miss Teen Blue Bonnet pageant, which is kind of like a beauty pageant, maybe. but the teenager is overweight. She talks quite openly about, you know, the problems that people have with just speaking about fat girls and, you know, talking about, you know, young women and men, young boys too, feeling comfortable in their skin while being overweight. There are a lot of subplots in the story, but she gathers some friends, or maybe not so much friends, but they do become friends, and they're kind of misfits, but they decide they're all going to run in the pageant together, and it's just so funny. So it's such a funny book and really rewarding because you see the character kind of, I mean, a lot of people believe in her already, but she doesn't believe in herself. So I really, really recommend that. I mean, if you're looking for a light, fun read. And I have to say that I was kind of attracted to this title because many, many moons ago, we're talking like 30 years ago, I ran for Miss American GI Forum when I was a teenager. And the American GI Forum is a Hispanic veterans and civil rights organization that was founded in 1948. And, you know, we say that these things are not beauty pageants. You know, there's all sorts of other things to them, but there was definitely, we definitely have that in our culture. So I just have like all these conflicted feelings about it.
Right.
The other book I want to recommend, and actually I'll start out by recommending first the movie that made me think of the book. The movie is called Everybody Knows, Todos Lo Saben. It's a film. I don't know if you guys have heard of Askar Farhadi. He's an Iranian filmmaker.
Oh, yes.
He's won some Oscars for his work. But this movie called Todo Saben, or Everybody Knows, it's kind of like a cozy mystery, but not exactly. But it's set in Spain. It's in a beautiful Spanish village. There's a really gorgeous like wedding reception scene that is just beautiful. I highly recommend the movie. But anyway, I got reminded of this other book also by Beth Kephart, which I talked about earlier in the podcast. The title is it's a YA book. It's called Small Damages. And I bought this book from the Friends of the Mason Library. And that, if you don't know, is like the used bookstore. Take books out of the collection, we often send them to our friends group so they can sell them. So I bought this book. It's a used book, and I'm afraid we don't actually have it in hardcover anymore at Cattle that I know of, but we do have it digitally. And this is a book that it's about a teenager who is pregnant, a teenager in the U.S., and her parents or her mother ships her off to Spain. And again, lots of Spanish villages, countryside of Spain, winemaking. There's, you know, an old world cook person who lives on the property where she gets sent to. Her name is Estella, and a horseman, a young horseman named Esteban. I just started it and have been thinking about this book for many years, and I'm glad I finally started it. That's it.
Awesome.
Okay.
Going to that backlist. That's cool.
Hey, yes.
We are getting a little towards the end here, but we have a few more. I'll try to make mine a little brief.
Still want to sneak in a couple too.
Yeah, okay. So I won't take the whole time here. The two more.
We'll get there.
When I say two more, I mean, this was really hard, I have to say, to choose these. I have many things I want to read for this fall and this summer. Yeah, this is really hard. I felt it was rough. It was maybe like 15 titles down to four. That's true.
Yes.
So I feel like I'm leaving a lot out, but we'll just talk about them another time. This next one, you may be, and listeners and the two of you may be hearing about this one. It's called The Beauty in Breaking.
Yes.
A memoir by Michelle Harper, coming out this month. Wow. Sounds very good. Michelle Harper, Dr. Michelle Harper, is a female African-American emergency room physician working in a predominantly white and male-dominated profession. And she tells the stories of her patients with great empathy. And through this, she examines what it means to heal and be healed. So it just sounds just fantastic. Yep. And the reviews and all the pre-pub press and are very good. And I believe she was on public radio talking about it already.
I think it's already hit the New York Times bestseller list as well.
Okay, awesome.
Just they announced it this week.
Fantastic. Can't wait to get my hands on that. The other one I've been waiting for a long time. It was supposed to come out in May. It got pushed to September. So it's called Eat a Peach by David Chang. Peach is I love food memoirs. And this is the memoir of the James Beard award-winning chef, restaurateur, TV personality, has his own show, David Chang. And it gets into how he started his New York restaurant, the Momofuku Noodle Bar. But then really gets into his struggles, you know, the struggles of being in the culinary industry and also his own challenges with mental illness. And so it sounds really fantastic. And I've heard that it's really candid and some comparisons to Anthony Bourdain's writing and his style too.
He's been really, I don't want to say doing the rounds because I don't mean it to minimize. I've seen him on things and heard of him during the pandemic because he's been very, very vocal about supporting the industry, the restaurant industry. Seems so interesting, and I'm really interested too.
And then a really quick backlist bump, The Yellow House by Sarah Broom. I talked about this last year, National Book Award winning book. It came out in paperback. So if you didn't get a chance to read it last year, I can't recommend that book enough. So how about you, Jessica? What's on your
TV? All right, I'll make it quick. And I will just say that New York Times bestselling romance writer Alyssa Cole is putting out a thriller this fall. And it comes out, I think, September 1st. It's called When No One Is Watching. And it's a twisty, it sounds like it's a really twisty psychological thriller, but it's based in the gentrification of a Brooklyn neighborhood. So a woman's coming home from a kind of a bad marriage, bad work experience. She's going home to Brooklyn, and that community, just in the small time she's been back, is changing so quickly and weirdly around her that there's actually a little bit more to it than your basic unfortunate gentrification plot. There may be a little something more sinister going on. And the other one is, I really, really love C.L. Polk, who has a series, fantasy series. First book was Witchmark. There's a new fantasy coming out in October called The Midnight Bargain that I'm really looking forward to. It's set in Regency, England, and I'm just very curious because I've liked everything else she's put out. Yes, just shortening the list was really hard. I'm so glad we got to sit around and talk books.
I have one picture book I'll recommend. It's called Outside In. It's by Deborah Underwood, and it's kind of like my COVID meditative book that I turned to. It's a picture book, and I remember in the spring just like seeing the outside change a lot. And it's a book that focuses quite a bit on just how connected we are to the outside world, even when we're inside.
Right.
So I hope parents especially will get a hold of that for their kids and read it aloud several times.
Okay.
That's Outside In by Deborah Underwood.
I have one more thing, Jessica.
Go for it.
I think of summer, I definitely do a lot of magazine reading in the summer too. And so that just really enjoy that way, you know, the visual aspect of magazines. And I wanted to just mention for our listeners that we have a subscription to RB. Our RB digital subscription has added I believe it's thousands of new titles.
Yes, that is true. Yep.
Of magazines, and they're international. So a couple of the British magazines that I love that are, if I really wanted them, they, you know, print, they'd be $100 a year or more for a subscription. They're on there. It is really fun. So if you haven't checked that out, it has a pretty good search engine. You can just dig around and see if there's anything that you really love on there. And it's just fun. And it does, I think the technology has really improved and reading those. They're more usable. You can even print some articles and that sort of thing. So recommend that service, RB Digital, for digital magazines.
Okay. Again, it's really nice to be able to sit around and talk books with you guys.
Yes. Yeah. Excellent. Got a lot of good titles from you today, from all of you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you all for joining us. Again, sign up for summer reading and remember about that 72-hour hold on the quarantine on materials. It's just something to keep in mind. Again, if you've got your material in on time, that nothing that accrues during that quarantine period will be held against you. Those fines will be waived. So bear with us. We're trying to get through as much as we can, as quickly as we can. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Hi, it's Sherry Jones with some good news. Capital Area District Libraries has reopened with contactless item pickup. Reserve items by placing a hold online or by calling a branch, then just schedule a time for pickup.
Member and staff safety is the number one priority, so cattle will remain in compliance with CDC guidelines. For details about their contactless service, safety measures, and more, visit the library's website at cadl.org.